This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Daily Digest. I'm Juliet Jacobs, joined by Ti Xiao Yik. So earlier we heard from arts practitioners, you know, about the struggles that they're facing to adapt to and to recover from the effects of COVID-19, the pandemic, and also the movement control order. But, you know, more importantly, a seeming lack of understanding about these struggles from the government. But now in our second story, something completely different. We're talking about Zoom fatigue.
Yes, we are asking you first on Twitter whether you are experiencing that phenomenon, I guess you call it. So Zoom fatigue, I guess, if I could sum it up, is, you know, the kind of stress and mental exhaustion that you may be facing from having endless video conferences and video meetings because you're working from home. So far, almost 70% of you say yes, you are experiencing Zoom fatigue. 30% of you say no. So keep those votes coming in. If you are not currently on some sort of Zoom meeting, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
But I think until fairly recently, you know, lively in-person conversations were the norm rather than the exception. Mm-hmm. But now working from home has become the norm, and so too has video meetings become, you know, our daily dose of...
We are familiar with
that,
aren't
we? We are very familiar. And whether you're using Google Hangouts or Skype, FaceTime or any of the other video calling interfaces, apparently it's really stressing people out. Research is showing that individuals that could make it through a day of in-person meetings with minimal issues have found themselves incredibly drained by a docket of video calls.
Yes, as virtual chats pile up in and out of the workplace, stress and burnout are being impacted. While burnout is characterized by prolonged periods of stress leading to mental, emotional and physical exhaustion, work-life integration plays a big part in all three. So as an article in Forbes magazine paints it, now that we are social distancing and using video conferencing for almost everything, the lines of neural association between work and home are being blurred. So, for example, you know, Harvard sleep experts recommend not using your bedroom for activities outside of sleep and intimacy for that very same reason, because it becomes harder for you to switch off and unwind.
Yes, and being on a video call requires more focus than a face-to-face chat, let's say. And that's according to Gianpiero Petriglieri, an associate professor at INSED who explores sustainable learning and developments in the workplace. So he was speaking to BBC WorkLife and he said that video chats mean that we need to work harder to process non-verbal cues like facial expressions, the tone and pitch of the voice, and of course, body language. And paying more attention to these really consumes a lot of energy. Yeah. He says that our minds are together when our bodies feel that we're not. And that dissonance, which causes people to have conflicting feelings, is really exhausting. And you can't relax, you know, into the conversation naturally.
Yeah. And, you know, multi-person screens also, they magnify this exhausting problem. You know, when you have that gallery view where all the meeting participants appear sort of Brady Bunch style, lined up in a grid, that challenges the brain's central vision. It's forcing your brain to decode so many people at once that sometimes no one comes through meaningfully, not even the speaker. And so this leads to another problem in which group video chats become less collaborative and more like siloed panels in which only two people at a time talk while the rest are just listening. And for some people, this creates a perplexing sense of being drained while having accomplished nothing. Quite contrary there, but I can totally understand it because, you know, the brain becomes overwhelmed by unfamiliar excess stimuli while being hyper-focused on searching for non-verbal cues that it can't find.
Yeah, and another added factor to when, you know, we're physically on camera is that we are very aware that we're being watched.
Yes,
right?
That's,
you know,
right.
All eyes are on you. Mm. So in a video conference, you know everyone's looking at you. So there comes that added social pressure and feeling like you need to actually perform because, you know, you're not in person as well. And being performative is quite nerve-wracking and more stressful. And this is according to Marissa Schaffler, who also spoke to BBC WorkLife, and she's an associate professor at Clemson University who studies workplace well-being and teamwork effectiveness. So another thing she pointed to was silence, which presents another challenge. This was according to Professor Gianpiero. He said that silence usually creates a natural rhythm in real-life conversation, but when it happens in a video call, you become anxious about perhaps maybe the technology or that it, and it also makes people uncomfortable. So there was a study in 2014 by German academics which showed that delays on phone or conferencing systems shaped our views of people negatively. Mm. Even delays of 1.2 seconds made people perceive the responder as less friendly or focused.
Oh dear, when in fact it's a technology issue. Yeah. And Associate Professor Giampiero also believes that our current circumstances, whether lockdown, quarantine, working from home or otherwise, are also feeding into this Zoom fatigue. According to his findings, we're all exhausted and we're experiencing the same disruption of the familiar during this pandemic, and really that's messing many of us up.
Yeah, and one other angle that makes video meetings stressful could be that, you know, usually most of our social roles happen in several different places. So there's the office, there's a, you know, you meet friends in a cafe, in a restaurant, whatever. But now that context has also collapsed. So Professor Petilaris believes that being confined in our own space in the context of, you know, a very anxiety-provoking crisis with only a space for interaction, the only space of interaction being a computer window, that's another cause of all that anxiety and exhaustion. So I don't know, is video chat really that much harder? You know, does everything really feel harder? Maybe because we're just stressed about the pandemic. Mm. So for some perspective, I got in touch with consultant, broadcaster and writer Matt Armitage of Culture Pop, who, you know, you'll also hear regularly on his segment called Mansplained. Matt Splained right here. Matt Splained right here on BFM. So I started off by asking Matt if he was experiencing Zoom fatigue as well.
I'm not so much experiencing Zoom fatigue as experiencing platform fatigue. I've got lots of different clients on different platforms. So the really hard thing is actually to try and remember how each of the platforms work. And you have the messy background syndrome. So some of the platforms like Zoom allow you to put in a background so you can hide the fact that the room you're in looks terrible. But some of the other platforms like Google Hangouts, Microsoft Teams, it's a little harder to do that. At least Microsoft Teams, I think, allows you to blur the background. With Google Hangouts, it's pretty much whatever mess is around you is kind of broadcast to the world. So yeah, it's just the number of platforms and keeping on top of the platforms. I think I'm using Zoom, Microsoft Teams, Skype, FaceTime, and of course WhatsApp. Just to stay in touch with a very kind of diverse group of people and clients. That's the real fatigue for me, that kind of platform overload.
And there's no escaping it, right? You have to, I mean, we can't go out. And, you know, the article was talking about how it's a different kind of face-to-face meeting, right? So why, I mean, of course, compared to what we used to have, you know, in-person face-to-face meeting, but, you know, what do you think is making video chat all that much harder for people?
Well, you know, when you're in a room and you're talking to people, you can read the room quite easily. You can get a sense of the general sentiment in the room. You can see whether people are in agreement. You've got to look at these little bubbles on your screen, and in sort of quite large meetings, you're not actually seeing all of the people all at once. So it can be difficult to get that sense of are people agreeing with you? Are they disagreeing with you? And of course, what's worse is that to cut down on interference and chatter, a lot of people mute their microphones when they're not talking. So you just have this very kind of passive group of people, and you're desperately searching faces, which are all arrayed in your line of sight, you know, whereas in a normal meeting, they'd be kind of spread out all around you. So everything is kind of concentrated in that one place. So I'm not surprised that some people are feeling that kind of stress and pressure from these platforms.
And I think, you know, they mentioned also that, you know, you are also seeing everyone at once, right? Along with someone who you don't usually observe, your own self. And that's kind of creating this almost like a visual overload, because, you know, it's just, I mean, whatever screen we're looking at, you know, we're trying to process, like you said, 5, 10, 20 different people side by side. It's almost like watching, you know, 5, 10 different shows at the same time, which is something our brain, you know, isn't really programmed to sort of process as such. It's very exhausting, right?
Yeah, there's an element of that. I mean, I usually switch my own reflection off, because that's the last thing I want to see when I'm on a call with someone. But I mean, I was chatting with a friend about this last week, and you know, you can often get pulled into meetings that you don't really need to be in. you know, a mass invite goes out and you find yourself sitting on a 40-minute or a 60-minute video call and you don't really have anything to contribute. So I was, you know, chatting to a friend about this and saying, you know, you develop what I like to call the Instagram face, this face that looks engaged and as though you're listening, but when you're actually, what you're actually doing is actually looking at kitten videos on Instagram or something else in your browser, but you're just trying to look as though you're very engaged and very interested in following along with the conversation.
Mm-hmm. It's become almost performative, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially, as I said, a lot of people mute their microphones, so people are amplifying their physical gestures and, you know, nodding a lot more forcefully than they would, or using their hands. You know, you get a lot of thumbs ups on the video calls because people don't want to add to that, like I said, that noise interference, because some of the systems are not as robust as others. So when you have a lot of microphones operating on the system, you can sometimes get some feedback and some loops going on those things as well. So, you know, they're not perfect by any measure.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, though, that all of this stress that we're saying we're having, you know, you think that's justified? I mean, for one, you know, we've removed travel stress, for example, you know, going from meeting to meeting. You know, you're presumably seated at home in a place that's hopefully secure and familiar for you. So, I mean, do you think all of this is really, what gives, you know, why do you think it's justified?
I'm not sure if it's actually the video meetings that are the cause of the stress or just that overall idea of being locked up in your home and working from home. I mean, we've all seen those terrible sci-fi movies where some great calamity has locked people in their homes and they're just in, you know, shows like Black Mirror and those kind of dystopian sci-fi shows. And they show people working from home and living in tiny cubes and interfacing with the world via screens, but never really able to go out and touch that world. And that's kind of the reality we found ourselves in for the last kind of month or 6 weeks. And I think that is potentially more the source of stress, the idea that these horrible ideas of the future are coming true. And also because we don't really see an end to this current situation. In Malaysia, you know, every 2 weeks, the MCO is getting extended. I wouldn't want to conjecture on when it will actually be lifted or how that lifting is going to take place. But it's going to be a very long time, I think, before our lives approach what we thought was normal before this happened. So even when it's lifted, people may not be going back to work from their offices right away. They may still be doing some of this kind of remote working and this remote meeting. So this idea of having to, you know, fundamentally redesign and reorder your life, it's just been dumped on people all at once. And we don't have a blueprint for it. We don't have a template for them to work from. So, you know, we're this giant living experiment on how to adapt our digital world into our homes in a way that allows us to work, to earn money. But also, you know, we've made our four walls essentially our entire world. So there's a lot of additional pressure that come with all of these lockdowns.
Yeah, but you know, like you said, moving forward, you know, this might be the new normal, as they call it, right? And we're probably going to be doing a lot more of, specifically video communication, you know, to just get through our lives. So how do you think we can make it sustainable and workable in, as you said, you know, this giant experiment that we're currently living in?
Well, you know, I have a heads up on most people because, you know, I'm British. So physical contact to me is something that only happens to between me and people that I've known for 20 or 30 years. So, you know, I don't have to worry so much about that social distancing aspect because it's been bred into me from birth. But no, there are going to have to be a lot of changes. We're going to have to change the way we look at a lot of social interactions, how we gather, you know, how we go to pubs and clubs and bars and restaurants and cafes. Those businesses are going to have to come up with different models that work as well. You know, the idea of going to a concert with 10,000 people is now just insane. So, you know, if we want industries like live music to continue, we have to look at models that will actually work. Does that mean fewer people go, but much higher ticket prices, for example. You know, there's going to have to be a fundamental reordering of a lot of businesses because we don't know when we'll get a vaccine for this. We don't know if a vaccine will be effective. We don't know how this virus might mutate. So a lot of industries are going to have to change. And, you know, we may have to look as well at the end of that era of low-cost international travel. And we may move to a situation where airlines are protected, nationalized industries again. I mean, there are going to be a lot of fundamental changes on the back of a lot of new technology, but a lot of reordering of our kind of traditional businesses in the face of this pandemic.
And you know, just looking at a smaller thing of, for example, this Zoom fatigue that we're talking about, right? How do you think we can sort of alleviate that, you know, just to sort of get through this, I suppose?
Well, I think, you know, we have to stop looking at it, I think, as an impediment. I think the article you shared with me, it does give some tips like turning off your video feed, turning off your microphone so that you're not constantly on camera. I've noticed in a lot of calls that I'm in that people tend to angle their camera up at the screen rather than appearing on screen all the time. I actually find that more annoying than anything else, because the last thing I want to have a look at is the possibly not well dusted lamp in your living room. So, you know, we do have to look at these things, but, you know, we shouldn't stress about it too much. I mean, for me, the idea of switching on the camera and the microphone, that actually adds more stress than just kind of standing there. And I'll be honest, when I'm doing Zoom calls, you know, if I'm not engaged in the conversation at that point, I'll wander off. I've got my Bluetooth headphones in. I can hear what everyone's saying. So I will wander off camera and go and get a drink or whatever. I don't think you have to take it, you know, so rigidly seriously. But again, just talk to your colleagues, talk to your teammates, maybe privately and not on a Zoom call. But also look at the way that things work. Don't have a video call for the sake of having a video call. Look at all the ways that you would normally work. Send information to people, text them, call them, share the, you know, most of us now have the ability to work collaboratively online, whether through Google Docs or similar tools with Microsoft or whatever platform that you happen to be using. So we don't necessarily have to be doing these calls all of the time. So it's just, you know, get a bit of context, talk to your teammates, get a workflow that actually works for you, and maybe just bring the video calls down to a manageable level and use them for, you know, checking up on people, finding out how they're actually doing. Take a bit of time at the beginning of the call, or even call people privately before you go into the calls, just to find out how they're getting on, if there's anything you can do to help. You know, just the normal things that you do before going into a meeting, which is having a quick word with your colleagues.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think another thing that they mentioned was, you know, just wherever possible, have a phone call instead.
Exactly. Not everything needs to be a video. So just look at what the work actually needs and keep it to a minimum. And of course, you know, one of the things, I mean, we haven't mentioned so much during this is you have to still keep that element of kind of work-life balance. So don't be doing Zoom video calls at 11 o'clock at night. When, you know, you're tired and you've put the kids to bed or whatever, and you just want to relax and get some rest for the next day. You know, try and keep the boundaries between your work life and your personal life as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem for many, right? That blurring, because you're expected to be switched on all the time because you're at home. You don't have to travel. You don't need to, you know, do all of those things are taken out of the picture, right? So there's also this assumption, maybe an unfair assumption by employers, that you need to be switched on all the time, and that needs to change as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, you can just have those conversations with people and just say, you know, look, after 7 o'clock, I really need this to be my time. And, you know, please just, I'll respond to you in the morning.
So that was Culture Pop's Matt Armitage, a consultant, broadcaster and writer and a familiar face on BFM. You can hear him on his show, Matt Splained, not Mansplained, as I said
earlier. Matt explains everything for us. Yes. You know, we have a message on WhatsApp from Cynthia, who says she finds the use of screens for almost everything we do now increasingly exhausting. Previously, it was fine for work and some amount of play, but at least we did have face-to-face social contact to offset that. Now that even socializing is largely on screen, she says she can't seem to switch off and almost all interactions are starting to feel the same, which is tiring.
Yeah, it's quite exhausting, I can imagine.
Yeah. So there are some, well, tips or suggestions. Like Matt has said, limiting video chats to when they are absolutely necessary is a good start. So leave the rest to phone calls. And, you know, when you're doing a phone call, at least you can shift in your chair or you can walk around the room. You don't have to be stuck in front of the screen. Try to build transition periods in between video meetings. Maybe try stretching, having a drink or doing a bit of exercise in between those video calls. Make sure your camera is switched off.
That's right. I guess just keep moving and just not to be
actually,
stuck in one place.
Actually, that's very true. Yep.
Yeah, because it's really, yeah, it gets to you. Mm. And echoing something else that Matt said, boundaries and transitions are very important. So we need to create buffers which allow us to put one identity aside and then go into the other as we move between work and private personas. Mm. Very wise, Matt. That's why he explains. He explains a lot. Yes, thank you. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's show. But if you have any thoughts, you can always send us a message. Look us up on Facebook. Just send us a message at BFM The Bigger Picture. You can always tweet us at BFM Radio or send us messages over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m, it's another episode of Try This at Home. Today, the guest is Cheryl Ann Lau from Nude, and they are going to be talking about how to live green. So that's coming up after the 3 p.m. news. For now, we leave you with the Beatles with Drive My Car. This has been the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.